Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens, at the heart of Irish homes for over 40 years. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Bertie Ahern, former Taoiseach, good morning to you.
Morning to you, Claire.
Now, we wanted to get your take on this row over migrants between the British and the Irish governments. We had Adam Bolton on here earlier saying that this was a dangerous conversation to be having. Matthew Paris commenting on the slightly screw you tone from Rishi Sunak, as he described it. I mean, you've weathered similar diplomatic wrangles with Britain in your time. How do you rate this one?
Well, I just think we need to be careful on both sides. What starts off as, I think, just a necessity maybe to clarify what people are talking about, you can get into a heated debate that's pulling in Europe and pulling in the European Union and pulling in France and all the other things in it. And that would be unfortunate. So I think, listen, we're all conscious that it's election week and, you know, the local elections and the general election might be coming down very soon down the track in Britain as well. So, and one of the main items, and I suppose the plus item for Rishi Sunak, is the immigration policy and his Rwanda policy. Practically all the legislative time in the UK for the last few months, they've had very little legislation, but it's all been on Rwanda. So I suppose anything that mentions immigration is going to be bounced on.
So Ireland brings this up unbidden and Rishi Sunak takes the ball, runs out and says, look, the Rwanda policy is already working. I mean, we handed him a gimme, didn't we?
Well, you know, if he was looking for one, but, you know, I think the answer back to him, Claire, if I can try and give it in a fair way, the common travel area is now 101 years old. Rishi Sunak, I'm not sure if he's aware of that, but I'd expect somebody in his office would. And that's been updated. It was updated back at the Brexit talk back in 2020. And all is that the Irish government were doing, I think two things were happening. One, they said there were going to be an emergency legislation, which they had to, which was to facilitate returning asylum seekers to the UK, which was the legal fix required to reverse the Irish High Court ruling last month to the UK. And, you know, it was no longer, it was no longer a safe place for returning asylum seekers. Now, the court judgment, like all these things, the court judgment was about the whole procedure. It wasn't just about, I had a chance of reading through some of the judgment in the last few days, and it wasn't just about the return refugees, it was about the whole procedure. But anyway, that was one thing. And then there was the figure of 80,000 was mentioned. Now, I personally feel that the 80,000, if you look at the calculations, maybe it's all not documented.
Sorry, Bertie, just explain to me what the 80,000 figure is, as you understand it.
Yeah, the 80,000 is a firm assessment by the officials on the front line who deal with immigration policy for our country at the airport, the ports, and what turns up at the immigration office in Mount Street. So they were looking at a position for the last few years where there was a one-to-one correlation between what came through the ports and the airports and what came across the border. That has changed in the recent time to 20-to-1. So what the officials who deal with this every day and are looking at the applications came to the conclusion that it's probably now 80%. So I think that's a fair analysis for them to draw with. And I know that Harry McGee does a detailed analysis
he
of
does.
The figures this morning, which shows why that's true.
Yes. So, I mean, Helen McEntee's claim that 80% of people applying for asylum in Ireland are coming through the land border with Northern Ireland. And the accusation coming from the other side of this row, from the British, is that that figure is not verified or verifiable. We just don't have the detail on where that number is coming from, other than to point to those figures, as you say, where you've got people applying for asylum in the airports and the ports, as opposed to going to the immigration office.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, the answer to that, Claire, and the answer to the British is that since 1997, the Republic of Ireland changed our immigration legislation to allow immigration officers to examine travellers arriving in the state by sea and air. And there were also targeted controls conducted along the land border. Now, they're maybe not right on the border, but maybe they're south of the border. And that was referred to as intelligence-driven operations. Now, they're still in place. But if somebody comes down in the boot of a car or somebody comes down with a lorry driver or just in any car, it's very hard for the officials to include those figures. So, but they can make an intelligent assessment. And I think what the Minister, Helen McEntee, I think was quite within her right to draw the analysis of the frontline people. And because if you look at where the figures are going, this year we're going to have probably something like 25,000 people coming into the country. Very few of them are now coming through the airports. And the reason for that is that the airport have stepped up very strongly on people coming in, migrants coming in and checking their paperwork, and people who don't seem to have any paperwork. So all that has been enforced. So what's happened is, but the figures have gone up. So, and Nigerians, if you take the first 4 months of this year, Nigeria was 2,000 to 6,000 that came in. Now, there's no flights from Abuja to Dublin, and I think some of the British politicians should know that fact. So if they're not coming through the ports and the airports, they're coming in some other way. And the obvious way is through Northern Ireland. So I think it's a fair assessment to say.
Okay, but then you have Micheál Martin saying that the claim wasn't based on evidence.
Well, what he's saying is, now in fairness, what he's saying is that it's not based on statistical fact, but we employ good officials who do a very good assessment, and they're watching the paperwork all the time, and they're working. They're not only watching the airports, they're watching PSNI numbers, and, you know, they can make a... They're looking at the figures year in, year out, and I think they can make a fair shot at it.
Okay.
The reality is, but we have, you know, 25,000 people coming in, we have to do something about it. Now, I think with the British, which is a bit annoying, but anyway, it's an election week, so we won't get too excited about it. What the British are trying to say, that the legal fix that we're trying to bring in now is something to do with something new, and that we're going to start moving out everyone that comes in here illegally or legally. That isn't what they're doing. All that issue is doing is bringing the common travel area back to what it was and predates the EU.
Okay.
It's nothing to do with anything else.
Can I ask you about the wisdom of bringing this up at all? Because you said, you know, at the beginning there that if you're trying to clarify what people are talking about, so I assume what you mean is if you're trying to make a political point to address what voters in this country are talking about, you may have been sleepwalking into this spat, which could end up being hugely problematic. Now, was it wise for the Irish government to go about it in the way that it did?
Well, I think the problem is when the minister was asked in a Dáil committee what the figures were and what the percentage was, she's an obligation to answer it, and I think she did that. But what the bit I don't like is how something that's to do with the common travel area, which is 101 years old, which we're just trying to bring it back to what was meant to do, which, by the way, Claire, I don't think it'll make a hell of a difference in how many people come into this country. I don't think that's the policies that we're following about far better checks in the airport, checks, these emergency checks that take place on our side of the border, better control mechanisms, faster dealing with cases of people coming in. They're the issues that are going to make a difference. I don't think it's sustainable for us to allow 25,000 plus come in this year and do nothing about it. And I think that's what the government are correctly doing, because we don't have the accommodation. We have the appalling situation of Mount Street. We have a Morrick survey recently saying 74% of people are opposed to the number that are here. They want to be helpful, but they want to be humanitarian about this, but they just can't keep on taking huge numbers. So all of these things are building up. But I don't think on this issue we need a spat with the British government. I don't think it's helpful.
So should Ireland continue to push to be legally allowed to send these people back to the UK?
I think under the common travel policy agreement, which was slightly changed by the High Court judgment, we're bringing that back to the common travel area. But I think we have to, in my view, Claire, that is not going to change the numbers. I mean, the British politicians yesterday were trying to interpret, or at least some of them, and I saw last night Sky, CNN, Channel 4, they were all running, I think, an unfair line that what we're trying to do is that everyone that comes in here from wherever that comes through the north, we're trying to throw them out. That is totally incorrect. All that we're trying to do is to bring the common travel area that's there for 101 years back to what it was, and that predates the EU and it predates the court case. So it's not a big issue at all, and it's not going to solve anything. And it's nothing to do with the French situation. It's a common travel between Ireland. And I should say this, which I think has been missed. I was listening to my great friend Rhys Mogg last night.
Oh, listen, don't even go there, because I want to play him. I have to play this again. He weighed in on this. This was during the GB news programme last night.
I just want to make one point about him. But I should tell him, because he's a great man, on a great friend of mine, as you know, from my Brexit days when we didn't agree on anything. But anyway, the Temporary Provisions Act of 1974 in Northern Ireland, it has powers to examine persons travelling between Northern Ireland and Britain. And back in my time, the Terrorism Act of 2000 provided for similar rules from the Home Office. And as far as I know, that's still the law. So, you know, rather than him saying, you know, there's no laws, the reality is that there is a basis for Northern Ireland screening people coming in from Britain. And I know that Rees-Mogg wouldn't like to make a valid point
like
that.
Let's have a quick listen to some of what he had to say last night.
What this news really presents is a golden opportunity. An opportunity to send all of the illegal migrants in the UK to facilities near the Irish border. If it just so happens that they then end up crossing the border, which, according to the Belfast Agreement, must remain open, and indeed our departure from the European Union agreement, so be it. According to the Irish courts, they're happy to take in all the poor refugees fleeing persecution. There is an army barracks that's apparently facing redevelopment, and we're using other military facilities in the rest of the UK, and Northern Ireland's a fundamental part of the UK. It can do its bit, and it can house some migrants, which can then be sent over to the Republic, where they'll be wonderfully safe, as opposed to this dangerous land that they tried to get into in the first place. This would have many advantages. It would keep the cost of Rwanda down, as fewer people would need to be sent there. And the EU would be so happy, because it would fulfil its beloved human rights obligations, and the Irish government could feel a sense of superiority to His Majesty's government.
Now, I know you can say he's poking the bear and, you know, he's trying to inflame the situation, but really he's only going one step further than Rishi Sunak did when he stood up and said, our policy is working, look.
Yeah, it is. Well, I suppose we should quickly say that we're very proud in this country that we do care about people that are fleeing from terrible conflicts, and we do have a conscience in this country, because our long history shows us that people who are being persecuted need to be protected. What we're trying to deal with is people who shouldn't be here and wouldn't pass the rigours of an assessment. But I mean, what Rees-Mogg was saying last night is that everybody that comes into Britain, that shouldn't be in Britain, from France and comes in the boats, we put them all on the Irish border. Well, you know, I wish to God British politicians would look at their own laws, and maybe I'll send them a text today, which I used to for years, and tell him read the common travel area and read his own terrorism legislation. But anyway, I'm wasting my time talking to him.
He'd probably use that in his programme if it's on tonight. But, you know, there is a serious point there, because there was a major focus on the border during the Brexit talks, and the EU had our backs on that the whole way through. No hard border on this island. But the EU's central plank is, you know, ensuring that its borders are secure. So, you know, at a time when the EU migration pact is our solution, you know, can we be sure that we would have the full-throated support of the EU on this if we can't guarantee our borders, and therefore the borders of the EU, are secure?
Well, I think the new EU regulations that are coming in, my problem with them is I don't think they take full effect till 2026. I think they're in front of one of the committees in the Dáil today, but anyway, the quicker the better that they're in, that will deal, because ultimately immigration is an international issue, it's a world issue, and it can only be dealt with from our point of view by the EU. But there's an awful lot of things, Claire, we can do before that. I mean, people who are coming in here, regards of how they're coming in, we need, and I know it's improving, Helen McCarthy, in my view, has done a good job in this, we're quickening the system, the appeal mechanism are not so dragged out. The problem is, over the last decade or so, people were coming in, their cases were not being looked at, they were using the appeal mechanism to stay here several years, and then saying it's totally unreasonable to throw them out. Now, as far as I'm concerned, if people are genuinely under threat, if they genuinely have human rights issues, we have an obligation to look after them. But if they're coming in here through the UK, they're coming from Abuja in flights, they're not coming in boats, they're flying from Abuja to England, and they're coming in here, they're not legal, they're not suffering from tortures, except Coca Harmon might be chasing some of them, but then we have a right to be able to look at those cases and deal with them. Mm-hmm. And that's what the government are doing. But as I said earlier on, that is nothing to do with the common travel area, which the British politicians jumped on yesterday.
But do you expect the EU to turn to Ireland and say, your job is to secure the EU border against this influx?
I think the EU, in the new arrangements that they're bringing in and the new clauses are put out, are trying to cater for that issue. But because we've a land border with the UK and the UK are not in the EU, it's going to be an ongoing problem for us. And it is interesting, Claire, and you know, nobody wants to focus on this one, but I'm just raising it. It is interesting how, as soon as we tightened up on the ports and in the airports last year, that there was a switch from a 1-to-1 ratio of people coming into this mm-hmm. country to a 20-to-1 on the border. Now, somebody somewhere highlighted that to them, because I don't think people from all these countries all of a sudden knew about the Irish border. They were obviously advised that this was a way in.
Right. Well, Padraig Tobin, the Aintu leader, has asked or called for this Irish sea border in terms of people, which would see asylum seekers who arrive into Northern Ireland, they'd be subjected to the same passport controls as they would have at Irish airports and ports. What's your view on that suggestion?
Well, I mean, there, as I've said earlier on, there is, under the Prevention of Terrorism and the Act of 1974, amended in 2020, the British can check. I don't think we're going to start checking passports on the Irish border. That would be going against everything that we fought and won in the Brexit discussion. But I don't think the UK are going to do that. I don't think the UK have any interest, even though it's their law, of checking people coming in through Belfast or Larne or anywhere else. So I don't think that's going to happen. But we do have the targeted controls along the land border. And if the numbers are coming in to the extent that they're coming in, I think it is only right that we have more of this intelligent-driven operations on our side of the border mm-hmm. to stop people abusing this. And that isn't anything new. That's already in law.
And what did you think of James Cleverley's decision to cancel the meeting with Helen McEntee yesterday?
Well, I think, as I understand it, the Irish officials were all, and I might be wrong with this.
No, I think that's a given. They were there the night before preparing.
Yeah, I don't think that's a good idea. I can never remember, actually, British officials doing that on me. But anyway, I would have told them the next meeting it'll be in Kerry.
And listen, the response was that Helen McEntee then didn't travel to the British-Irish Intergovernmental Conference. Was that the right call to snub them back?
Yeah, no, I think it was a right call. If she went over for a meeting and they cancelled it at short notice, why she's enough to be doing. And, you know, she's doing a good job, in my view, trying to deal with all of this stuff rather than playing into their game. And unfortunately, watching the TV last night and the spin last night, I think number 10 spin doctors were doing a good job trying to make this all about Rwanda, when in fact it was about the common travel area. I should have said, Claire, the common travel area, for it's there 101 years, it was updated in 2019 and it was reaffirmed in 2019 by a memorandum of understanding. So, you know, the British are aware of all of that, but
Okay.
Listen, it's a few days. I'm sure it'll make an enormous difference to their local election results. So I'll check which on Saturday.
All right. Well, we'll see whether it does or not. In the meantime, we'll tell Kerry to get ready for James Cleverly. Former Taoiseach Bertie Ahern, thank you for joining us. Coming up next, Dr. Shane Bergen will be telling us what scientific conspiracy theories still exist and why some of them tend to gain traction.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.